All right.
Voting has started.
Welcome to Service Area 3's January Board of Trustees meeting. Today is Tuesday, January 20th, 2026. The time is 5:30 PM. Let's start with the roll call and conflict of interest disclosure. Carrie, do you want to start?
Carrie Tex, no conflicts.
David Olson, no conflicts.
Caroline Glythe, no conflicts.
Otto Blob, no conflicts.
Justin Shea, no conflicts.
Derek Price, no conflicts.
Scott Witkin, no conflicts.
Chris Bullock, no conflicts.
Nathan Bratton, legal counsel, no conflicts.
Vincent Powell, Borchgen, no conflict.
Okay.
Got it. Jody?
Jody and Agnes, no conflicts.
All right. Welcome to anyone who's online. We're going to jump right into election of officers. If anybody wants to self-nominate or nominate someone else for chair, now is the time.
Go for it, Dave.
Thank you.
I want to nominate Derek for chair. Is that how you do it?
Okay, so Justin Shea nominated Derek for chair. We need a second for that.
Second.
Okay, all those in favor? Aye.
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 All those opposed? Congratulations.
Who seconded that, please?
Otto.
Okay.
Before we went any further, I did want to let you know that I was going to resign as clerk. Just have too much going on, and I know it's a two-year position. So I just wanted everyone to know that.
So are you resigning effective now?
As clerk, yeah.
Okay, so we probably need to have an election on that too.
Yeah, that's why I was telling you.
Okay.
So
I'll go ahead and do a nomination for vice chair. Nominate Justin, vice chair.
Wait a second. I thought Justin was just elected chair.
No, Derek.
Derek.
Oh, Derek. Sorry.
We have a second.
I second that.
All those in favor? Actually, is it your meeting now? Excuse me. Is it Derek's meeting?
Yeah.
It's all yours.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Sorry, Jody, that was, I nominated Justin and Carrie seconded.
Got it. Thank you.
And do we want to move to clerk?
Yeah. So this would probably be, I mean, felt the remains of the chair's term. It's your 1 year in.
Yeah. I just know I have too much travel coming up and logistics, so. And I also would say that, you know, there was a lot of conversation about having a second clerk. I know that came up repeatedly. So my suggestion would be that we maybe do a clerk and an alternate, because I know that came up so many different times.
Yeah, so typically, I mean, the clerk position, and this is something maybe to think about in terms of updating your rules of order procedure, is the clerk position doesn't have to be a member of the board. It could be a staff position. For instance, you could designate Jody to be the clerk, and that's probably the more common procedure to see in the district, as long as the clerk and the treasurer are the same person. It's just this board, when I came on, historically had been a board-managed entity without any staff, and so they just had the custom of having the board membership that role. So you could either just make Jody the clerk or somebody else on staff, or you could have a board member who serves as the clerk, but then make the someone on staff a deputy clerk. That way there's always someone filling in, and the board members just overseeing what the clerk does.
I just think our, from my opinion, our like staff is so small and our board is, you know, like I think it'd be nice to have some separations and some, you know, I mean, I'm happy to be the alternate clerk even.
Yeah.
I just think that for me, I'd love for the clerk to be on the board still.
And that's always been the argument too, is that you have a large board, it spreads away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So does anyone have an interest in doing clerk?
Hey, what?
Or he's wincing at least.
I'll nominate myself to be clerk.
I'll second that.
That was Dave self-nominating and Scott seconding. Jody? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
And do you want to do an alternate? So I mean, I'm happy to do alternate. I just, it's like, then there's like two people or.
Sure. Can I nominate? I mean, can I suggest that or do we need to?
I would think since we don't have a policy, we wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, they don't really have that in writing and technically, that's, let's maybe work on that in terms of how you guys want to do it so we can. Because like I said, your rules of order procedure, as I mentioned at the training last week, they were created by a prior board. I think they work, but you're a different board.
I thought at the last meeting, you did informally put in an alternate clerk because Derek was the alternate clerk.
We haven't drafted or approved.
Yeah.
It was in.
Wasn't he able to be the active one, but?
I think it was just kind of a temporary thing, wasn't it?
It was informal.
So do we want to do a temporary alternate clerk until we get it drafted, just so that if Dave's out of town, then you guys don't have those issues again?
I guess the question is, do we have that? That was noticed as a deputy clerk on the last agenda. This is an election of office.
Oh, okay.
And so I just don't know if we've noticed that up in this meeting. Because when the past one, that was a specific agenda item that we talked about. And in this case, it's the election of officers and the deputy clerk technically is an office.
So we can get this out next month.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like, I'm just thinking, like, I know for me, it was, you know, if you, it was something that I still think that we could, if we get bills that we don't need to pay them exactly that week, and if you actually Google it or talk to a CFO, like of my company, that there's a reason why you don't necessarily always pay your bills right away. You want to lag and pay in arrears. So I do think that we don't have to pay the bills the second they come in, that if there's 30-day payment terms or 60-day payment terms. But since it has been something that has been really the staff's preference to have someone on board right away, I do think it would help whoever's in the position to just have someone to tag team it, no matter who that is, whether it's me or whether someone else wants to tag team with Dave. I do think that let's create that for the next meeting if we can. Because I know, I mean, you can have a life and you're going to want to travel and they're going to want you to come like a couple of times. So.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And whether it's, you know, I don't think it matters who it is. I do it, maybe John, you would do it. I mean, I think that just to have two people doing it at this point, that was a real push last time.
Otto can't do it because he's treasurer.
Oh, he is. Okay. But Caroline can do it. Scott can do it.
We can talk about it in the next meeting.
Yeah.
Put that on the agenda.
And then Ben's all just come up with you this week.
Yep.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, perfect.
Okay, so we'll be moving into public comments. So if we have any either here in person or online, we'll go ahead and start. And again, if you can identify yourself by name and either lot number or address, and then limit your comments to 3 minutes. I'll keep us moving along. Appreciate it. Jimmy?
Luann Lukumba, lot number 195. Just one quick thing. When I just went into the service area 3 and it says that there's a meeting tonight, it would be nice if there's a little spot that said agenda right there that you could just click on the agenda. Instead of like, I'm still looking for it. I don't know, it's there somewhere. Secondly, I just, our little road on Summit and whatever that other road is that goes up overhill, there's that little corner that doesn't have any, that didn't get paved when my road got paved. We talked about maybe getting that little corner paved so it doesn't have dirt go all over our nice, beautiful new road.
Okay. I'll get some road mill there. We can't pave it this time.
I don't care what it is.
Yes, we'll get something there.
I just use that term loosely. And then there's also like two little potholes in front of Heidi Kaiserman's house that you might not be aware of, Silver Creek Road. Thanks.
Thank you.
Can I just quickly respond to Luann about the website? Because it is a little funky the way the agenda is right now. And at some point it changed and I don't know why. Our site is hosted by Summit County, but you have to enter an end date that's different. Right now it defaults to, it's like April 22nd, 2025. So you have to change the year to 2026. And then you could see all of like the most recent agendas and minutes and stuff. And I've asked the county about that and I haven't really gotten much response. But the reason why we posted on the agenda page is because it stamps it. It says this is what day it was posted. So it's easy to make sure that we're compliant of when we're posting everything. And that it also triggers all the emails for people who have signed up for notification so that when it gets posted, people automatically get an email. So that's why it's everything's posted on that agenda page. But I think that date thing is making it hard for people to find that.
And that's the service areas page, right, Jody?
Yeah, it's our page that's hosted on the Summit County site. There's like a page just for agendas and minutes. It's like the very first one on the left navigation.
And I would recommend if you want to, the best site to follow is probably the Utah Public Notice website. That's one that state set up for people to get automatic notice. That's a lot easier to use.
I know that I can find it. I am just suggesting and asking that we ask the county if when we put in Silver Creek Service Area 3, the page pops up and it says the date of the meeting, that there could just be a hyperlink that says agenda. And we could just click there and it would take us there instead of having to go through the process to remember and figure out where it is and find it. And I know I received the notice about it and saw it, but now I'm sitting here in the meeting, I'm like, oh, I'd like to like look at the agenda while I'm here. And I'm sure I'll find it before the meeting's over.
Jody, so do all edits to the website, does that have to go through the county, like requests and stuff like that?
No, I do them.
Oh, you?
Yeah, I do all those. Anything on like the county page, you know, if there's, I'm trying to think, I just recently tried to get, David had asked me a question about like the number of hits on our site and stuff like that. I go to the Summit County page, but I can do all the edits. I update all the audio recordings, minutes. Like I keep the landing page, all that. I probably do it maybe two or three times a week. I make changes on the website.
So are you
making updated information? Yeah, I got you.
Jody, this is Derek. Are you able to add a hyperlink?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Any other comments?
Hello, everyone. Sally White, 1230 Page Road. So I say Happy New Year to everyone and thank all of you for all that you do for us. Silver Creek means a lot. Thank you for all the board members who I know so well. Welcome new members, Caroline and Justin. I just, in the past, I've volunteered, whether it's social media or helping post on Nextdoor. You know, Jody had a really great thing where we'd like feature, because we have really cool people in our neighborhood and some really epic, you know, Peekaboo Streets, a good friend of mine is many years. So I just want to offer my volunteer service as always. And just, I'm really excited for 2026. Thank you.
Thank you, Sally. Anybody online?
No, there's no one online except me.
Right. It takes us to the administrative financial. So the pending minutes. Any questions with the minutes?
Just need a motion to approve minutes. There's two sets of minutes that need to be approved.
Hey, Jody, the first draft that went out with the attached minutes, it seemed like, I think it was some sort of AI version, names were all messed up and everything. This newer version of it looks different, so that was all cleaned up, I guess?
Oh, I wasn't aware. Which minutes are you talking about, the December or the January?
It was...
Because usually I put everything into a PDF, and then I like organize it all. So I'm surprised if it's like that. I will have to try to figure out what happened because I wasn't aware.
Yeah, I was just curious. It was the one I think you sent out on the 13th, and it had... Does anybody else remember reading it? No? Okay, I'll get with you after. Oh, you know what? Maybe it's this Gemini thing.
Oh, it could be something like that. I try not to use that because a lot of times, like in the board training, every time Nathan spoke, it said it was Vince. And so it gets really confusing.
Yep. I'm looking at it now and all the names are misspelled. And instead of Carrie Tex, it says Terry Tex.
Oh, weird.
That's a different document. We're not going to incorporate that into the minutes.
Yeah, that was something that planner. It's a new thing that it will start or automatically set that out to attendees of that meeting.
Yeah.
I think that's why you got it.
Yeah.
But you know, there's a reason we don't use it.
Yeah, clearly. Okay, perfect.
Oh, is that one of those day I note takers?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, those automatically send those out. That's something probably won't change because no one has.
Yeah, that was the first time that it did it. So it was a change to.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. See, and I wasn't aware that that went out. So.
I wasn't either.
Yeah, sorry to confuse that with the minutes. So any comments on the minutes or good?
I motion to approve.
I'll second that. Scott motion, Derek approved. I'm sorry, Scott motion, Derek seconded.
Yes, I'm a chair.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? You?
And then there are another set that need to be voted on, which is from the workshop training. Excuse me, they're pretty brief. The bulk of it is the presentations, which I added, which is why the board pack and agenda is so long, because I felt like they kind of spoke for themselves. But that is going to be the minutes that will be posted for that agenda. And that needs a vote as well.
Okay, get a motion to approve that.
A motion to approve.
Second.
Justin motioned to approve and Scott seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Thank you. Trying to catch the rest of the agenda here. Scrolling through all these slides. What's the next pages there? It's a chair. Okay. So now we're moving into the financial report.
This was prepared by Dave Sanderson, catching us up with the recent invoices that came in to help close out the year.
What do we budget for snow removal?
Every year we budget 100 and. $130.
Do we have a minimum spend on it, like 20 or something? There's no minimum.
No, there's no minimum. There's mobilization.
Right.
And then it's time and material.
Gotcha.
So
is it an annual mobilization fee or do we keep them? It's annual.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they take their equipment out, correct, in May or June or whatever.
Yep.
How long do you have the current company?
This is our first year.
Oh, okay.
We had Wolf Excavating for many, many years. And then their owner, Tom Wolf, passed away, got new owners, and we put everything out to bid again during that time. Rockford Construction is the new guys. Most of their employees have worked with either Tom or other snow removal vendors that we've worked in the past, so they're familiar with Silver Creek, which is great.
Chris, Wolf came back with some crazy number, right?
Yeah, they came back with a significant increase to what it was in the past.
Yeah. It's probably what's going to happen next year. Make up.
Well, they're not making any money this year.
Yeah. You know, I don't think a little more next year.
And just so the new board members know, the budget for snow removal is at the time based on a 7-year average. So in years like this, we bank the money, and then years like we had 2 or 3 years ago, we've got that reserved for it.
Is this year ending 25?
Yes.
Okay.
So you'll see. At the end of the year, we did end up with $31,000 surplus, which goes in account of reserves.
Maybe we should, I don't know if we can allocate any to trail maintenance, but given the current conditions.
Yeah, so good question. One of the things we do is for trail maintenance, we budget $30,000 a year, and we generally, other than minor maintenance, we generally do some bigger projects every 2 or 3 years, just again, mobilization and the cost of everything. it's definitely much more cost effective to do a bigger project, smaller one-offs.
Did we talk about the same exact topic that we were, there was an interest in more trail maintenance for this year? I thought that that's what we had discussed.
Correct. So, yeah, we wouldn't. So we'll take what we've taken stored or in reserves for the last 2 years, because the prior year we had Geneva do that big extension up Silver Creek Road and down Westwood. So whatever we have in the budget for this upcoming year, plus the capital reserve, we'll look at that and come up with some trail projects that we'll present to the board probably here in March and April.
Okay.
In preparation for the construction season.
For the spring.
Yeah.
So that's in the 2026 budget. This is
Yeah. 2026 is a 2025, sorry.
Yeah, I think there was a great interest, I thought, last time we spoke about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, keep in mind, from 3 years ago, that winter, we're still trying to refill our capital reserves. So little Justin went from the 130 to over 700,000. And then there's a ton of road work that needs to be done to fix all the runoff and the damage from that. So we'd like to rebuild capital reserves a little bit.
On the interest, where does that come from? Just where we put the.
The state requires us to keep monies in a PTIF fund, which is kind of a state fund. And that's where we earn the interest, as opposed to private banks.
So it's forcing you to do it?
Yeah. And so that's everything from capital reserves.
Everything you got, basically.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, is there a minimum you have to do, or there's no cap? It's just.
But we try and put as much in there just because it's advantageous with the interest rates.
What do they give you guys?
We're five-ish.
It's like treasuries plus 50.
Okay.
Something like that.
The thing is you can't take public money and hoard it. And so the idea is that if you have savings, you have to put it aside in a capital reserve fund for specific projects. And that's managed by the state treasurer.
Do they pay interest monthly or quarterly, or how does it work?
It's monthly, but it just first mostly quarterly.
We have to double check.
Okay.
And I'm not sure how much savings. I think it's the state.
Yep.
Something close, but. The campus managed by the state treasurer's office.
Correct.
So you can't use any of that surplus?
So what we would do with, so this is from last year. We have the 2026 budget that covered the January 1st this year through the end.
Yeah.
And that's where if we have a surplus, we could put it into a capital reserve fund. But I mean, 31,000 is a pretty spot on for the size of your budget.
Yeah.
The idea is if you have a good budget, you don't want it to be too over or under.
And you know, it's, we have a, from a road and snowplow budget standpoint, a great winter for that. But again, we don't like to immediately take that money and spend it because we're still rebuilding capital reserves. And then again, that's kind of that rainy day. The district doesn't have the ability just to go out and get a line of credit in case we needed it. So we have to be very judicious with the finances.
Any additional comments on the 2025 budget? Closing out. Get a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
No. It's informational.
And be very informed. Water, roads, and trails.
Okay, an update on water for Greenfield. We had some testing recently. We just got the results this afternoon, so I'll bring back some recommendations and stuff at next month's meeting regarding the Greenfield well, the findings and the results that we'll need to do there for the repairs. Other than that, I don't have any other water. We'll have a lot of water discussion here in a little bit with the bonding.
Hey, Chris, I got a question for you.
Yes.
Something just came up on KBCW. I don't know if you guys saw that. There was an issue with the contractor for the school district dumping an illegal dumping into Silver Creek. Did you guys see that?
I saw that.
Well, it was in the
Silver Creek.
Treasure Creek.
Right.
Yeah.
But is it, that's not an Iroquois or anything like that?
It's to the east of us.
Okay.
So basically it parallels 80. So it goes through the rail trail. On the,
it continues towards Watchet.
Yep.
Okay.
So.
Chris, this might be ahead, but can we use the bond money to fix Greenfield Well if we have to?
I think it's worked in there, isn't it? The arsenic study was part of the bond.
Okay.
So the repair, not. We do have a rather large contingency that we're hoping potentially, you know, once we find out what we need to do, we'll create some RFPs and put that out and see what that actual cost is.
And you're saying it can be covered by the bond or it's not?
It can't be covered at this point.
Cannot.
Right. Can't be added to it. Yeah, we could potentially add to it. But at this point, it's not. And we just have literally the study back this afternoon.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. What were they drilling behind the church auxiliary lot?
Oh, that's perk testing for their expansion. They're having to do some perk testing there.
Okay.
Soil sampling and stuff.
So. Okay.
One trail update, I've been working with the church, their expansion, Mount Life, and then coordinating with Basin Rec and Summit County, their active transportation group, to see if there's potentially any funding to improve the trail on Silver Creek, potentially do a better job of connecting it with our trails. So the county's looking into that. There are grants available, and the way it was explained to me, if there's more community input, i.e. us, the church, based on the county, the success of those grants are considerably higher. And for those that don't know, the church does actively run a day school, which will probably get expanded maybe. With their expansion, we don't know yet, so that's another reason that we're with the transit center and the bus stop wanting to really improve that area.
So people call the county about this expansion and ask for grants, it'll go up, is that what you're saying? Or what are you asking people to do?
We're not asking people to do anything.
Oh.
This is just to let you know that we are looking at potential grants to get some trail work done.
Okay.
In that area. With Mountain Line and Taste Track. And the discussion also came up about maintenance and air. And so that was brought up by some members of the public in the past to, you know, keep that Silver Creek Trail up through Wasatch and Silver Creek area more open because of the bus stop.
I don't have anything else for roads.
I get a question.
Yes, Dave.
I haven't seen it yet, but I or is the new snow removal company using a grader?
Yes, they it's parked. It's parked at the wellhouse.
Okay.
On Echo.
We what little snow removal they did a tremendous amount of damage. I wonder if anybody else is seeing damage on their road. Because they did a lot of damage.
So that damage on your road wasn't from the grader, actually was from their plow truck.
Oh, wow.
And I've already addressed that with the contractor.
Okay.
As we all recall, we typically keep our blades up 2 inches. We ask the contractor to keep the blade up 2 inches to protect the roads. And that's why we have a lot of snowpack, because we haven't had snowpack. He actually dropped the blade to the ground, which took out a lot of the fill potholes material.
Yeah, I think makes sense, because I thought he ran the grader right over the crown of the road and just kind of took the top off of it, because it looks like all the new potholes were right on the crown of the road.
Yeah, it was the truck.
Okay.
In your area, typically they use the graders on the upper roads, and the truck in the center and the lower roads.
Okay.
Are they sanding all the way up Silver Creek?
You just say.
They when they needed to sand, they sand all the way up Silver Creek, all the intersections and stuff.
So with damage like that, what's the recourse thing? I don't know. Give you free.
So at the end of the season, we'll address it with them, and they'll have a certain duty to repair themselves, or a deduction will be made.
Gotcha.
So.
Okay, I'm going to close this out. So our roads and trails. We'll move into the water infrastructure bond hearing.
Yep. Jared is here. Six. Bond attorney to help walk us through this. This has kind of created the recap for this, for the public who's here. Basically, our water system improvement that this bond covers is to replace a district well that was drilled in the 60s. And at that time, when that well was drilled, they didn't contemplate the growth and size of Silver Creek. So it is undersized. It is being drawn considerably as the primary district well, which we already have hard water, but it is increasing the total of dissolved solids in the water. It's also replaced the Silver Bullet with an in-ground 750,000-gallon tank. It's going to be in a new location, east of Crescent Drive. And given its new location with the elevation, it's going to be an in-ground concrete tank, which will give us a life of 80 to 100 years minimum, and also meet all fire flow expectations at full build-out requirements. Also addresses the natural occurring arsenic in the Greenfield well. And for the new trustees, when that Greenfield well was originally drilled and water tested, it met current EPA standards. Once that well went into production, the EPA actually lowered the threshold for arsenic. Because of that, we're only able to run that well for 3 months out of the year. It's during irrigation season in the summer, and it's blended district well in the Silver Bullet tank. And so this bond covers the arsenic study, which we've already started, and actually Bill Laughlin, who's our hydrologist, just gave word tonight that we got the study back. So we'll be reviewing that to see where that is. And then the last component of the bond is to cover some major fire flow improvements on Lower Silver Creek. And that's to address dead ends and underside mains down in the area. So we'll be looping many of the water lines and upsizing their size to meet the current fire flow standards. From the bond term, we actually were able to get some amazing rates in a time where it's extremely difficult. So basically, our entire project is estimated to be shy of $7 million. We were able to get almost a 30% reduction in that via grant or loan forgiveness. And so that will leave us basically a $4,691,000 loan for 39 years at 0.5%. Given our average household income in Silver Creek, we should have been around the 4 to 5% range of interest. So it's a massive savings to the service area. And because of that, we are going to have to raise some of our rates, and this only applies to those on the water system and those properties that pay standby fees that are adjacent to the water line. So it doesn't affect anybody other than that. Because of cost savings with repairs and through the years, knowing that this was coming down the line, you're able to keep the decreases to a minimum. And this chart shows what we need to raise it in the next 5 years. So we're going from $109 to $112 a month for those on the water system for this year. So $3 increase there. Also increasing residential ADU and not residential. Private beacons will also be increased. And then obviously the standby fees with those that are adjacent to water line. And that could be either vacant or on their own private water right. And those are a yearly fee as opposed to those on a water system paying monthly fees. We'll also increase our usage fees come 2027. We are looking to keep those overages for this year.
Hey, Vince?
Yes.
If I'm reading this right, it looks like the residential ADU rate drops from 27 to 28. It's the only one that does.
Thank you. That was the typo that was addressed to me by a resident who caught that.
Okay. Yeah. So what's the right number? 150.
Yes, so that should be the
flip-flop
2028. But that should be 151.
Yeah.
And is the private beacon monthly or is that yearly?
So that's yearly, and that's for those on a private well.
Okay.
That is not service area rights that want the ability to monitor their usage via our Ion Water app.
Got it.
So we charge them our pass-through cost.
Got it.
Can you remind everyone? Oh, never mind. Sorry. I was going to say, remind everyone that they have to have Ion Water to get forgiveness.
Yes. So the service area offers a free service with Ion Water, and basically everybody on the water system has access to a free app that shows their usage, and they can let them know leaks. They can set that up. They can monitor their own. It's safe for all users on the service area water rights. All of our meters have this beacon that allows them to do that. Part of our policy for a leak forgiveness is that they're signed up for that, and hoping that they're going to be responsible and get the first alerts if they have the leak.
What's the name of that app? Sorry.
Ion Water.
It's very key. Just today, I went out to two residences. I got notice on the Ion Water. One of them was leaking 280 gallons an hour. So I mean, it's very important that people look at and monitor their own usage.
Jody, is that on the website? Like something like a note about that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a whole page on Ion Water, and I give it. And when people, like I did a property transfer today, when I set up their new account, they get a new email. There's information and it talks about how to sign up for Ion Water and the importance and all that stuff.
Nice.
And we've been promoting this for the last 5-ish years.
Yeah. Sally, throw it on next door. Ion Water.
Yeah. It's been in pretty much every newsletter and every water bill that goes out has it on it.
Cool.
Very proactive. And then we'll open it up for public comment on the bond hearing. Derek, do you have anything to add, input?
Not particularly, just, yeah, in accordance with
you introduce yourself.
Yeah, I'm Derek Gross. I'm with Gail Warren Bell, work with Randy Larson. We're bond attorneys that advise on bond issuances. So in accordance with state law, this is a requirement in order to issue bonds. You have to have a public hearing and provide the public notice of that hearing and give the public an opportunity to comment and on the impact that it could have, the bond issuance and the project could have on the private sector. So as part of that process, that's why we have a public bond hearing. And is there any questions about that before we?
Garrett, we have two new board members who weren't here.
Okay.
When the prior board adopted the resolution, could you maybe for them and for the record go through the process the service area has done to date with this bond?
Yeah, you bet.
And explain to them what's expected of them after they hear public comment from members of the public today.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So back late last year, we had the board adopt what we call a parameters resolution. What the parameters resolution is, it authorizes
the uppermost limits of the bond issue, you know, the maximum amount that the board when the sort of the district would be able to borrow, the maximum interest rate that the board authorizes on that the bonds could bear, and then the maximum term length of term for number in terms of number of years that the bonds could go out, that the district would be obligated to make repayment on. And that is part of those parameters the board authorized late last year. And then it starts what is called a 30-day contest period. Once those parameters are adopted, where then the public has the opportunity to contest the bonds or contest the bonds or object to the issuance of the bonds. And then following that or during that 30-day period, then we have what's this statutorily required public hearing that gives the public the opportunity to provide public comment on the issuance of the bonds. So that way that there's full transparency, there's full understanding by the board, the public of what essentially is being entailed. And Vince gave a great explanation of what the project is. It's and probably a better detailed explanation than I could give on the project itself. But that in essence is what has taken place heretofore. Also, you know, there were drinking water board requires some additional, in addition to the bond statute, some additional requirements in terms of having the public notified rate increases and some additional information by mail that isn't typically just required under the bond statute. So we've helped the district prepare and provide those notices as well. Any questions from the new board members on the bond issuance, the process?
Can you walk them through what's expected of them after they hear public comment today?
Yeah. So basically after we the public provides comment, you know, today, there's no vote necessarily required, but just essentially you know, you approve the minutes at the next or in the normal course of business of the board. When the parameters were adopted, they were actually put to a vote. With the public hearing itself, there's not an actual vote required, just a requirement that the bond issuance and the public has the opportunity to comment at this time.
So,
and there is a document that I've been sent over that the attorney's office sent us that the clerk and the chair will sign,
right,
that verifies that we've done all the public noticing, we've had our public hearing, all that we're in compliance legally.
That's correct. Yep.
And Joey, this is Derek. I have a question about Garrett.
Yeah.
So Garrett raised the idea or the fact that the upper limits need to be set for this bond. If we're looking at the cost, the projected cost here, so 3.3 for one, 3.4 for the other, the forgiveness of 2.0 brings us to that total amount. If those expenses were to change, by the time we, you know, put shovels in dirt, if it goes up or down, how does that work itself out in the end?
Good question. We contacted the Division of Drinking Water. We'll back up a little bit. All the engineering that gets done needs to be approved by Division of Drinking Water. Those go out for RFP. And obviously, if numbers come back skewed, they do set a contingency. So within that amount is a contingent fund. It's pretty hefty because the state across the state has been seeing every other month rates go up. We'll go back to Division of Drinking Water for the additional monies, which they may or may not approve, but there's a process there.
That would potentially be at a different interest rate than the really favorable one that we currently have.
Yeah, that I am not sure with that. That's a good question. I can find out.
But between the contingency and also the bond resolution that you guys approved a couple months ago, the firm, Garrett's firm, they did set the limit at 5 million. So they essentially added another additional contingency on top of the 4.6, I believe it is.
So there's a little bit of a cushion.
There's a cushion, yeah. We try to set a little cushion.
Yeah, and from what I've seen with DGW these funding, it's pretty common for these approvals to come back and be for money. Yeah, because the process of when you think it's going to cost and by the time you go through the process, it's changed. And they're understanding.
Yeah, so we set the code. I mean, there's some wiggle room there to, you know, work with the board, you know, before you would have to. If you need it as part of that additional funding, if you need more bonding, we try to set that cushion. So you know, hopefully we don't have to come back to the board for more, right? You know, I mean, if worst comes to worst and they need a lot more funding, there's major cost overruns, you know, we would just simply back to see if the board felt it was necessary to authorize.
Okay.
Where did we come up with the 6.772 number for the total improvement cost? And maybe we can I'm sure this is something I just need to get caught up on, but yeah.
A good question. We hired out Joe Santos with Brimbach to help us with those estimates to go off on the hydraulics. Is able to get some to put in there. And then they're very conservative numbers to put in, knowing that it would potentially change. And DDW kind of, you know, asked multiple times, is this a real number? We're going to put this contingency on it because we know what's happening in the real universe. So.
And then do we get the bond money all? Sorry if I'm naive, but I'm just trying to get caught up. Do we get the bond money all at once, or is it phased over the, like, what is the estimated timeline for the project?
Good question. So basically, whenever we, once it's approved, and you can help me out here, Jared, if I misspeak, essentially, once we get invoices in, we'll approve them, turn them over to DDW, they'll approve it and pay them. So as we get invoices. Additionally, because a lot of engineering, we had a big part ahead of time, we will get reimbursed.
Okay.
So, you know, we are keeping track of the spend the last couple of years for kind of light work, pre-work.
Okay. And so, what's the estimated time of date of completion for the well? How long are we thinking it's going to take?
Well, I think after this, we're probably looking at, 60 days maybe for DDW to go through their process.
You still need to get approval from the state engineer.
We still need to get approval from the state engineer or some things. We're hoping to be ready to go on a lot of this stuff. The well, we will probably start that process before approval.
Okay.
That's probably the most critical to start. We've already got some engineering done from Bill Laughlin. And you know, that's going to be the least amount out of our pocket for the biggest bang moving forward.
And what's DDW again?
Division Drinking
Water.
Utah Division.
Utah Division Drinking Water.
Okay.
The whole bonding with funding is through the State Revolving Fund, which is state and federally funded.
Can I make a comment about that? So the SRF loans, so this is being done under the Safe Drinking Water Act.
Okay.
So there are two laws, the Safe Drinking Water Act and the Clean Water Act. Safe Drinking Water Act is what governs drinking water construction. It's a federal law that sets federal minimums, but then each state has the ability to opt in to administer these federal programs. And so in Utah, the Division of Drinking Water is what administers the Safe Drinking Water Act. And to help states comply with that, there's been this thing called the State Revolving Loan Fund, which has largely historically been funded with federal appropriations. Under this, the most recent, those SRFs have been cut by 60%. So the federal money is essentially going away.
Carolyn and Justin, you weren't here for this update, but one of the things that the legislature did last year, the other board knows, is they're imposing a fee that every culinary water supplier is going to have to pay for every 1,000 gallons of water they provide, which will help ideally make up for this loss in federal revenue. So the point is, you got money there now. Going forward, it's not going to be there. So we kind of got in at the nick of time. I don't think, my personal opinion is these types of terms are going to be harder to get. They're the limited funds.
Yeah.
Understood. And so if we use less of the money, like let's say we're, because these are conservative numbers, are we, would we alter the fee schedule or would the fee schedule remain?
So that's, oh, go ahead.
I was going to go ahead. No, no.
Well, so part of the reason why you have a fee schedule that you need to increase is the common issue. These are too low. And so basically what the state division of drinking water is saying, hey, if you're going to get this sweetheart deal where we're going to forgive part of your loan with taxpayer dollars, it's not fair to make the other taxpayers in Utah pay part of your infrastructure cost and your fees are so low. So you need to bring your fees, for lack of a better term, up to market rate, so they're not so low, so you're not getting completely subsidized by everything else. And that's a common problem that a lot of water providers have when they go to the board to get funds.
So after 29, the fees will stabilize and they won't keep, I mean, we can't see it in the future, but there was no plan increase after 29. Is that correct?
There will be. Every year it's kind of on a escalating, so every year it goes up slightly. And again, that's to give us an opportunity. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think you can address this in closed session.
Yeah. Okay.
And answer
yeah.
her question more specifically.
Okay. Why closed session?
Yeah, because it has to be litigation, professional character, competent acquisition of the property, or maybe one of the security personnel.
That's a good point. So basically,
if there's future.
Yeah, so with growth, usage, and that's why if you notice on here, we future usage rates dependent on actual use data.
Understood.
So this is what the division required.
Okay.
So the division said we need to see a rate schedule for these years in order for you to qualify for these terms.
Understood.
And so what happens after that is going to be the board's call at that time. But the challenge with rates are, and I'll tell this from representing waters across the state, is there's this tendency, and I'm sure Garrett sees this, to not increase rates. And so what happens is then you get a big infrastructure need, you go to the state, and the state looks at your rates and says, we're not giving you anything, because you should have been charging more money and putting it aside in the capital reserve fund you have. And so the goal now, and what the state wants to see, is for you to stay on top of your rates, do marginal or nominal increases each year to stay on top of inflation, so you're not doing this huge hit when there's a crisis.
And that's a good point. One of the reasons we that contributed to these favorable funds is knowing that we needed to do this project a number of years ago, we started increasing rates to account for that because we had no idea what kind of funding we could potentially have, and we knew if we did get funding, which we would be able to cover that. Another water district close to us here, Silver Creek, went out for a $3 million loan to have some major water main increases, and their water rates went up $80 overnight, and they didn't get anywhere near favorable terms. So, you know, one of the things in that application process DDW looked at was kind of our last 10 years history. There's point scale. You do everything you're supposed to, you end up with 0 points. Every time you're deemed, you get, you know, those points. They looked at ours and we've had a pretty spot clean record, including having a history of every couple of years raising the rates.
Nathan, out of all the districts that you represent in Utah, how do our water rates compare?
These are getting pretty good. I mean, like when I first started representing the district, your rates were just, you wouldn't qualify for anything because your rates are so low. And to be fair, this happened with a lot of every government entity. Recession hit in 2007, 2008, and then everybody just kind of froze rates. And then right around, what would you say, 2013, at that period of time, everybody started having these delayed costs hit, and the service area I think had been kind of late to that game,
And then Vince, you were newly on the board, and I think we had a well failure that kind of, it wasn't a huge failure, it will get fixed in a couple of days, but it kind of made everyone realize that they need to get our act together. So I think your rates are, I mean, like I said, this happens pretty much every time any entity goes to the state, is they will want you to increase your rates. And I think part of it is every board is incentivized to keep rates as low as possible. I don't think your rates are going up that much. So for instance, I have another district. Now, they're trying to get water for a new firehouse. They need water, fire, other things. And their rates are going to go up for fire like $2,000 a year because they've been that low for that long. And they're already like yours with a significant fire risk too. So
the next similar water district just covers Trailside, that whole area, actually Summit Water, which does quite a bit from the Snagro Basin. Their base rate, and they do have a similar allocation on some of the areas. Their base rate is 139 starting. So we are still some of the least expensive. Mountain Regional has a lower base rate that they charge you from the first gallon on. There's no allocation. Once you factor in our allocation, it's somewhere around 170 a month.
The other thing to keep in mind when you're looking at rates is, and this is, I think, somewhat consistent, is a lot of the infrastructure that we rely on in Utah was built 57 years ago. It was built largely with either state or federal money with relatively little input from the local citizens. And now all that infrastructure is aging out, coming due, or past sign life, and the bills are piling up. And so we have people that have been along, well, I haven't had to pay this much before. And so, yeah, because you basically had free infrastructure that was in the middle of its prime. And if you've been in Silver Creek for 20 years, this is going to be new, but that's because they had the benefit of having infrastructure that was still good. Now it's all kind of coming due at the same time. The state has like over a $35 billion water infrastructure price tag just to maintain what it has now.
Yeah, I've been participating with the DPW's latest kind of scan with districts. They put a poll out to find out what the immediate 5 to 10 year need is. So far, it's just over half of the districts that applied. They're at $8 to $10 billion of immediate infrastructure need. And you can imagine that tied in with the fact that federal cuts to that funding are going to be reduced 60%. That's starting at the UASD meeting, given the update on that. They're basically, they've already been signaled by Washington that states are going to be on their own for the vast majority of infrastructure.
This is a nationwide issue. It's not unique to Utah. A lot of states, and Utah, I don't think, has said this, a lot of states are saying, all right, if you're not going to pay for it, feds, we're just going to turn it back over to you, and you can administer all these safe drinking water permits in our state. So Utah hasn't said that, but if Utah were to do that, we'd be dealing with EPA, not with the Division of Drinking Water.
Is this money escrowed?
It is, yeah. And I was going to say, in answer to the earlier question, it's escrowed as soon as the bonds close, it's held in escrow and drawn upon as projects. Or as payments are costs.
It is, yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Just because I might have missed it, was there any like negative feedback from homeowners in December, the December meeting? No? Has anybody brought any? No.
What's that?
Homeowners like up the bond and everything?
Yeah. Typically on the bond, like on the parameters, I mean, we have to give basically the 30-day content period, right? You know, from the time the board adopts the parameters, right? There's no notice period prior to that, right? Other than just the you know, essentially compliance with open meeting laws, this is going to be first.
Okay.
We haven't received any objections, I'm aware.
Nope.
I would say we've gotten a lot of support.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From the bond, yeah. From the race.
Yeah.
People realize, you know, we have a 67-year-old infrastructure issue. And, you know, when Solar Creek was originally developed, there's no such thing as an ADU. There's no such thing as a 7, 10, 12,000 square foot home.
Or the Safe Drinking Water Act.
Or the Safe Drinking Water Act. And it was also put in by a private developer as opposed to municipalities. So And again, it's a big number. It always is when you talk about millions of dollars, but you know, when you think about the delivering safe water for the next 80 to 100 years, we're going to be pretty good here.
As part of the water testing requirements, are we testing PFAS as well?
Yep.
Okay, and that's all?
We have no PFAS.
Oh, that's great to hear.
Yeah, we do monthly, quarterly, and yearly testing. We have, other than the water harvest, the TDS, which is just everywhere here in the Rockies, we have amazing water quality. We don't treat our water. Our wells are drilled 800 to 900,000 feet to ensure that.
We have 800 to
900,000 feet. Chris, our water manager, he's getting a little gray because of the age of the infrastructure. But, you know, we like to say we don't ever want to be.
Is there a way to future-proof the filtration so that we don't run into the same arsenic problem where the regulations leapfrog the
equipment? So I can speak to that. So before I worked here, I worked with Western States Water. Organization represents the Western Governors of Waters. I was there when they did the arsenic rule. So there's never really any way you can predict what EPA is going to do with those federal standards. And so the problem with that is that arsenic in particular is a naturally occurring chemical in the West. It just occurs, particularly in Utah and I think Nevada, it's just here naturally. And the problem, my personal thing with EPA is a lot of the people who work for EPA are very well intentioned, but they're based out east. And so a lot of these rules, that was always a continual problem when I was with the council, was like, hey, this rule really works well for the East Coast. It doesn't really account for some of these Western unique features, and arsenic was one. And that was one that actually drove the Western states a little bit nuts, because they're like, wait, you've set this limit at a level that doesn't work naturally out here. Like, we're trying to get rid of stuff that occurs naturally, and what they're trying to deal with is introduce pollutants in other places where it's naturally lower. So there's really no real way to future-proof things. But when you're, the problem we have now, the Greenfield well has been a manageable thing with arsenic, and with the study we're doing, you hopefully isolate the zone so you can deal with that better. The real problem with your district well is total dissolved solids, and that just comes from overusing that well. So what we're hoping to do is have some redundancy. So if you can get the Greenfield well to a point where you can use it year-round, and if you can get a new well, so you have three municipal wells and you can alternate those in terms of how you use it, you're not relying so much on the district well, the resting can help. But Bill is your groundwater expert. He's one of the best experts on this in the state. Our firm uses him all the time. So Bill, correct me if I've said anything wrong. I don't have technical expertise. I don't. So he's nodding his head. So let's record so that Bill can hear it, but what David said. But that's the deal. So the idea, I think, going forward is making sure we have enough redundancy in the system. You have had redundancy because you have had two wells, but now you'll have a third. And hopefully we'll, basically, correct me if I'm wrong, but the idea is we can rest the district well and finally start to use the Greenfield well and have another second well. And then the district well can just be the backup well.
And then blend them with arsenic is... Yeah, well, it's high. Okay.
And that's even blending during the summer months, we're still below EPA, which allows us to do it. One of the things that by having the three wells, none of our wells standalone would be able to keep up reliably on its own. Having the tertiary backup is really important in this case. And we'll be upsizing, or the hope is the new well will have a ton of source capacity that will allow us to run it truly as a primary.
Cool.
Thanks. So should we move to public comment?
Any other questions? Not?
Thanks. Everybody's scared enough. Public comment on the bond hearings. Having heard none?
I don't have anyone in line either.
Okay. So we move to the fee schedule.
Now, for this one, Vince, since these are technically separate hearings, I know you went through the fee schedule as part of the bond. But just for the record, could you go through the reason for the fee schedule change and then overview what the changes are?
Yep. Moving forward to the rate and fee schedule, the proposed rate and fee changes for this year that we're addressing tonight strictly on the water system to address the need for the water bond repayment. And one thing we didn't mention, or I didn't mention, is this first payment on the bond is a year after completion of the project. So what we're looking at is for the residential going from 109 to 112. For this year, residential ADU to 142 from 139. Non-residential going up from 175 to 170. So roughly $3 per. We do have some accounts that are based on an ERU. Which is a equivalent residential unit. It's a calculation that's done. So Little Miners, for example, is charged that way. It's a base rate plus times the number of ERUs. So that'll be going up from 40 to 50. And then we'll also be looking at raising standby fees. Again, those are for those lots for one reason or the other are adjacent to the water line. And that composes of those that are using a service area water right that are adjacent to water line, i.e. well using the service area water right. Those that are on a private well and private water rights that are adjacent to a water line. And then also any vacant lot.
And so standby fees are always controversial, doesn't matter where you are. Reason for that is that the people in the service area who are adjacent to the water line that haven't connected, whether they're diverting their allocations to private well or whether they are have their own water right, we have to maintain that system so that they can connect whenever they have a right to connect at any time. So there's a cost that we incur in maintaining that system. So when someone says, hey, I have my private well and it's failing and I want to connect, or I have this vacant lot that I want to connect, They're helping contribute to the cost in a much smaller way than the average users are, but that's the reason. And that gets confusing wherever you are.
Yes.
People are like, wait, I'm not connected to the system, why am I paying something? It's like, well, the system exists, you have fire flow, you can connect whenever you want, there's a cost of that. If you want to give up that right, you can work that out, and then they're like, losers, people are like, no, I don't have to give up the right to connect.
Okay, then that brings us in. Any questions on this? Then that moves us into the fee schedule and post.
Meaning the schedule that you just posted?
Yeah, and again, statute requires us to allow public input on that as well.
Okay,
so any public comment on the fee hearing?
Sorry. I still don't have anyone online.
Okay, having heard none, then we will advance to.
Well, we do need a motion if there's no public comment. Unlike the bond hearings, we do need a motion. This is the close resolution that would adopt what Vince just proposed.
I motion that we adopt the new fee schedule starting 2026.
And I will make that correction on the type of.
Well, it's specific to the fee schedule in regard to this project.
Well, it's you've just adopted a water rate that applies. It's not specific to this project. That's the new water rate you're going to have to
for the connected users.
For the connected users, yeah.
Second.
So Jody, David motioned and Otto seconded. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nathan, this is just a hypothetical question, crazy question, but since this is just for connected users, does Upper Silver Creek have a vote on this?
Well, the vote is the board. The board does the vote for it all, but this does not affect in any way the upper well users because they are not connected to the system. And the only fees that the upper, that a private well user that's not adjacent to the system would pay is the annual assessment cost that we pay to maintain the shares that underlie those water rights, and if they go over their allocations. But the fees that we charge to the water system are intended to cover the cost of operating the system. Since the upper lot owners maintain and operate their own wells, we can't charge them fees for that.
I mean, it was just kind of.
No, it's a good clarification.
Question, yeah.
Because that's been, I think that it is a unique thing. So usually when you do a water rate hearing, everyone's connected to the system, but no, this will only apply to the people that are connected to the system or that have the right to connections.
Again, we're the unicorn.
Yeah, you know, most, the upper lots are a different thing because, you know, we can't, we try to charge these rates on the water system to cover the cost. We're not a profit generating entity. And so we can charge a little bit of, you know, extra to help for capital reserves and things. But no, none of this, nobody on an upper lot will pay for this. And part of that is the revenue from your water system goes into a water enterprise fund to operate that system. And those funds typically, you know, no one from the upper lots is contributed to that.
All right. Well, first I want to thank our guests for coming out tonight. Appreciate you taking your time to do that. And then are we moving into closed session? Is that a reason for that?
I don't have anything.
Thank you.
We have a need to go to closed session, then?
Could we?
So normally in the past, I sent over a couple scripts. In the past, Rick Parisi's kind of been the guy who always reads. There's a motion. It's pretty specifically worded.
Got it. That's currently I share. Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sal. Shall I wait to read it until they?
No, we have to read the motion. Okay. If it makes a lesson.
All right, I made a motion to move into closed session to discuss the character, professional competence, physical and mental health of an individual pending or reasonably imminent litigation or the sale and or the sale or purchase of real property pursuant to Utah Code 52-4-204 through 205. Do you have a second?
Second.
Jody, that was obviously Justin reading and motioning, and I think David.
Yeah, all those in favor.
Seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.